I'm Francesca Morgan, and you're listening to Industry Experts. Brought to you by Vox Markets, this podcast series features industry leaders providing an in-depth take on the nuances, innovations, and challenges shaping their field. Equileap is a leading organization providing data and insights on gender equality in the corporate sector. Uniquely, Equileap tackles this from every corner of the workplace, touching 19 criteria from maternity leave to boardroom diversity, so that no stone is left unturned. For this reason, Equileap are casting a much-needed gender lens, upending the conversation aimed at gender parity in the workplace. Today, I'm in conversation with Diana Van Maastricht, a founding member of Equileap. She's recognized that by leveraging the power of investment, which really symbolizes the tipping point, you can align your interests with, quote, the mission of the people.
Thank you for coming in. It's nice that you're in London and we can talk directly. I'm really interested in Equileap and your mission there. I think it's amazing that you're, you know, at the forefront of this mission targeting gender equality, and the corporate world seems like a good place to start. So I was really interested in your background and how you carved your pathway to where you are now. So maybe we could start with that. You know, I saw that you were involved in a lot of philanthropic areas for, you know, the third largest bank in the Netherlands, which is crazy. So how is being, you know, having been in that, in the backdrop of a huge publicly listed company, how is that, you know, defined to now today, to where you are?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here. Indeed, Equileap was born at my last job, which was a very interesting job. I was working for ABN AMRO Private Bank, where I set up their philanthropy services, where we advised their wealthy individuals on how to have more impact with their philanthropic giving. And while doing that work, I realized that a lot of these philanthropists give money with a certain mission, but they weren't investing the rest of their capital with the same mission. And many times, even this was not aligned or it was counterproductive. So, for example, there were clients that wanted to support environmental protection, but they weren't looking into their portfolios and how their investment managers were managing their money. And many times, fossil fuels, coal, dirty companies were not being taken out of their investment portfolios while they were trying to give money to these causes. Another client had the mission of wanting to address diabetes. And with the returns of the capital investments of her endowment, she was giving to projects for diabetes. But she had never discussed this with her asset managers. And some of her investments were in companies that are really bad for your health, fast food, soda drinks. So I started having conversations with these clients and saying, it's great that you want to give your money to these philanthropic causes. Most of the money that you give comes from the returns of your endowments. Could we also look at the investments in your endowments and talk to your asset managers about aligning your investments with your giving? And this is where this trajectory starts, where I go down this road of understanding investments and being able to align them with the mission of people. And I found out that it's quite easy to invest with an ethical screen and to invest responsibly. What the investors needed was data in order to be able to select the companies that align the most to their mission. And I started to wonder about gender equality because before my job at a private bank, I had always worked for different NGOs in women's rights. And I missed my work for gender equality. And I started to wonder, could we also invest with a gender lens? When I started reading about gender lens investing, I found out that the theory was there. And yes, we could invest in this way. But what we were missing was the data. And not enough data companies were collecting information about how companies were treating both men and women and whether they were advancing gender equality or not. So this is where my journey started, and I thought maybe we could create an organization that would allow investors to invest with a gender lens. And the rest is history.
And do you think from working inside the bank, I mean, you know, to be able to change something whether it's an organization or a certain culture that has been so heavily instilled in a workplace, you need to have experienced it, right? You need to know how it operates. You need to know what's going to sway the majority of what is essentially a lifeline for these companies. You know, do you think by coming from an investment point of view for these companies as an incentive, do you think that's something that previously didn't really exist and that's why it was not as convincing as it seems to be now?
Well, we've seen it for other themes, and that was what was encouraging. Because we have seen that companies have addressed the issues around the environment and their carbon footprint, pretty much because society and investors have started asking about this. And so we thought, if that has worked for environmental issues, why not for gender equality? We also know that companies will change because of one or two things. And the one is because of regulation. Policy comes and a rule, a new law is made, there's policy, and the companies have to apply to this. But the other reason can be because society asks for it. And one of the people, or one of the groups that companies listen to within society is investors. And so we thought the theory is there, and we think that this can work. And this will accelerate gender equality if investors start investing with a gender lens.
Mm. And do you think that the corporate world is getting a certain level of pressure since a kind of new consciousness has been aimed at them from, being in a post-Me Too and Time's Up era? Do you think that's putting a substantial amount of pressure on them now?
It's the beginning, I think. And this puts us in a position of being able to take advantage of this pressure and to say to companies, look, this is important. Issues of gender balance, of closing the pay gap, of parental leave to both mothers and fathers, flexible working hours, all these issues are coming up. And if investors start to pay attention to this and want this, then companies will listen.
Right. Now, one of the reports which we're going to focus on is Equileap's Gender Equity Global Report from 2018. But before we get into the intricacies of this, according to McKinsey, full gender equality in the workforce could add as much as $23 trillion. This is huge. So the economic implications of gender parity, they're undeniable, right? So with companies likely to be financially more viable than with this, what are the other kind of the other benefits which, gender parity will bring, just to break it down?
Right. To break it down, there's two main benefits, and then you can look into both of them. One is that this is the right thing to do. Equity within society between men and women is the right thing to do, and I believe that many people believe this, and that it benefits not only women, but also men and their families, their communities. It's not about making the world better for women. It's about making the world better for all of us, and so it's the right thing to do. The other one that you mentioned is that it's quite a financial smart thing to do. And we see from reports like the one from McKinsey that indeed an equal participation of women in the economy could allow our world GDP to grow by 26%. That is what that $23 trillion means, 26%, so more than a quarter growth in global GDP. But we've also seen other research which says that when there's more diversity in a team, a company does better, takes less risks, is more sustainable, and has better financial returns. This also comes from the fact that there is an equal distribution of skills among men and women. And so if you go and look for the best people for your team, because we are 50% men and 50% women, coming up with the best should mean pretty much a team of 50-50 men and women. And when you have the best teams, you will have the best results.
And then now just leading on from aligning these investments with the mission of the people, as you said, we come on to the Gender Equity Global Report, which was released in 2018. So just breaking this down, can you tell me what this report essentially shows? What is it?
So the report is really meant to be the carrot and not the stick for the companies. It's the first time that anyone has ever created a list of these are the best companies when it comes to gender equality worldwide, when we look at gender equality holistically. So not just counting women on the board, but ensuring that we're looking at gender balance from the leadership position and all the way to the workforce, the right policies, the gender pay gap. So when we look at all these criteria and we make a list, that's what this report's supposed to do. It's supposed to say, here are the best performers. These are the companies doing really well, and these are the companies that are doing a little bit less well. But they're all together as the top performers. And so at the same time, it creates, for the first time, a baseline that we can say these are the countries that are doing better, these are the sectors that are doing better, and then every year we will come back with the same report and we can make comparisons and we can see if there's any improvement or not, and in where areas there's been the most improvement.
Interesting that you're comparing countries as well, because I guess the hope is that, you know, aside from a trade race or a technology race, hopefully there'll be a gender parity race, right?
Right. The hope is that we're creating a positive competition. And we think that companies are competitive by nature. And so by making these lists and by coming up with these names and rankings, we're able to create this healthy competition where I think that no one wants to be on the bottom of the list and people want to be on the top. And at least they want to say, well, we might not be the very best company, but we're the best in our sector or we're the best in our country. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're hoping to create, a healthy competition so that companies want to improve quicker.
And do you think that this healthy competition and then ranking based on criteria, do you think that that is then setting a new language which will, you know, encourage new incentives for these companies? Do you think that's some, you know, I think that's a great angle and one that I don't think I've seen yet.
Absolutely. And we've already seen it. Last year, when we launched our report in October, the top performing companies were all over Twitter and social media, very proud to have been mentioned in the report. And so we saw that they were themselves taking on and saying, look at this report, look at how we're doing. We're very proud. We're going to continue to improve. So I think we've seen some signs of that.
I agree, because even, you know, when I'm on Twitter or I see a company that are at the top of these lists, like General Motors, it's always, you know, General Motors are the high, you know, one of the highest gender parity, hardly any gender pay gap, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, the companies that have terrible ones are either in the news for the wrong reasons or just not in the news, right?
No, I think, you know, companies are willing to pay a lot of money for good news. And here they are getting good news for free for having had good behavior. So I think that it's an economic decision for them also to improve, not only because it's the right thing to do, but also the smart thing to do here. They're going to be recognized for it. A value today within companies is not only their product, you know, many people value companies because of their brand and what they stand for. And so for a company, it's very important to have a positive brand. And what better than to say we are a great employer and we're trying to address gender equality within our workforce.
Now, I like when you kind of start the report and the crux, the philosophy of your company is we can't change what we can't measure. And I'm in complete agreement with that. I think it's a great line. You know, we talked about this criteria. You have, you know, a vast amount of criteria that you cross-reference. So can we get into the ways in which you're measuring how far a company is working towards closing the gender pay gap in terms of how these strategies pan out and avoiding loopholes, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So when we started with the idea of Equileap, the first thing we did was to create this scorecard that has 19 criteria. And we didn't just invent it. We were inspired by what was already out there, which is the UN Women's Empowerment Principles. So we already had something to work from. And from these 7 principles, we were able to categorize them into 4 areas and 19 specific criteria. We then said we're going to score companies. A lot of people told us this is not possible because many of the things you're looking for, companies are not transparent about. So you won't be able to score them on the pay gap because they do not tell you what their average pay gap is. You won't be able to score them on what's the percentage of women in senior leadership, senior management positions, because they don't say that. So this is when our strategy came and we said, okay, very well, we have this scorecard, we believe in it. We're going to use it to score the companies. We'll look at the company's public data from their reports. If they don't say anything, they get zero for that specific criteria. And this is the way that we're trying to promote the transparency, by saying you will be scored whether you publish or you don't. If you don't publish, it's 0 points. And if you start to publish, it's better than nothing. So this is the encouragement that we're giving them, that you really can only get the best grades if you start to publish on all 19 criteria and if you start to show good numbers. And this is part of that change that we're trying to create.
So transparency is weaved throughout the report. One of my biggest takeaways from it was this is essentially where, you know, we're going to achieve gender parity is through transparency. By companies neglecting this, what kind of position are they putting themselves in?
Well, they're putting themselves in a position where they will have lower grades than they would if they would be transparent. Lower grades will be published, their lower scores. And when investors come to us and say, could we have your company score so that we can add a gender lens into our investments, those companies with the lower scores would not be included in the investment portfolios that are being created. So this is where the link is to no data, poor scores, not interesting for an investor who wants to invest with gender equality.
Another takeaway was that you said it's important to note that the companies are in these positions for a reason, that it's their development over a few years or a few decades. They're simply not ticking the boxes. So how do we discourage companies from ticking these boxes, on the surface appearing that they're doing right, but actually it's not being implemented throughout?
One of the ways that we are able to tackle this is that our last criteria, criteria 19, is to know if a company has actually gone through a gender equality audit. It's very rare, but there are companies who have done this. And the highest scoring companies, we see a number who have gone through an independent audit, meaning that their employees have also been interviewed, and they have the opinion of the employees next to the policies that are in place. And that by having that criteria, we are trying to ensure that those companies that are getting the very highest grades are also those that have had a gender audit. Another way that we look at avoiding just ticking the box is that we give alarm bells. Our alarm bells go to companies that have had a number of controversies of, for example, gender discrimination or sexual harassment, unequal pay. And when we find that, we give alarm bells to the companies. And that then you can see if a company has a score, but you can also see if they have triggered a number of our controversy alarm bells.
And those are the branches like sexual harassment. How closely linked are they to the gender pay gap?
Well, it's a different issue, but in the end, it comes from the same concept of discrimination, right?
Exactly. Now, it seems, when I read about the gender pay gap online or in the papers, it seems that often there's a certain emphasis on a particular part of the company. So, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, 94 listed companies were identified with lack of women across the board specifically. What do you think about the emphasis on diversity specifically in the boardroom? Do you think that this fails to address the issue in its entirety? Do you think that arguably it's then made easier for companies to tick boxes?
It's a difficult question what you ask, and I think it needs a number of answers, because on the one hand, gender parity in the boardroom is essential. We need to see gender balance in leadership positions. But at the same time, I would say next to that, it's not the only issue. And addressing only leadership and gender balance in the leadership position is not going to get us to a place where there's gender equity in the economy. So it's one of the issues we need to address, but there is no silver bullet when it comes to gender equality in the workplace. So we cannot just focus on one thing. And this is why it's important for us that to have created the scorecard, where we are looking at gender balance at the boardroom, but also in the workforce, in the participation of women, and also to look at the pay gap, but also to look at equal pay for equal work, and also to look at parental leave and flexible working hours. So all of this together, that's the only way that we can really take a holistic view and have a comprehensive idea of how far a company has come when we're talking about gender equality.
Right. And I guess it could work the other way around where, you know, companies, for some, it might appear easier for a woman to get into a junior-based job. But then maybe in a couple of years, she comes back, and then for the mid to high levels, you know, it's easier for a man. So, you know, on the surface, it's easier for women to get into entry-level jobs, but then mm-hmm. this needs to be implemented across to the higher levels, right?
Exactly. And this is why we look at gender balance in four levels within the company. So we look at the workforce level, at the senior management level, at the executive level, and at the board level. And there we see that in some companies, at the lower levels, there will be somewhat of a gender balance. But then you go higher and you have a disbalance, which shows clearly that there's been a glass ceiling, because women are entering the workforce and the company at an equal level. But then you quickly see that they drop out in the percentages. And so it's important to look at all the levels of a company and not just at the board.
I think that's so important, because I think that it then sets a certain consciousness where, you know, people who are applying for these jobs are under the impression that, you know, everything's sorted now, you know, that woman got a job over me, we must, you know, be in the midst of gender parity. But actually, they can't see what's going up on the higher levels, can they?
No, and there are different things that could be going on. You know, a couple of women could have been picked to take those seats at leadership positions. But then the company stops there and says, okay, that's enough. We don't need to look at other issues. And if you really look at it, and you look at it from a woman's perspective of what you hope to get out of your career and what you would like to have, if I ask 10 women this question, I think a couple of them, maybe three, might say, I would like to be in a leadership position. I would like to become CEO of a company, or I would like to be on the board. But not all of them would have that ambition. But all of them will probably say, I would like to get paid equally for the same type of work as a man. I would like to be promoted at the same level. I would like to be, I would like to have access to parental leave. I would like my partner to have access to parental leave. So there are many more issues where these are cross-cutting, and all the women and men would like to have access to, and not everybody wants to be in a leadership position.
And just coming back to the report, you know, you were tracking some great and positive change, but also it still remains substantially patchy. Now, it reported that there weren't many signs that change is being embedded in global corporate culture. So I wonder, across the 23 countries analyzed, Do you see that there are any particular trends which are likely to steer change? For instance, have we noticed a significant difference in a country like the UK, where you know, gender pay gap reporting is essential, it's obligatory now?
That's a great trend. And we're seeing it in different countries. So we've seen it in the UK, and I think it'll have, in this year's report, we will see the impact of that. When we launch our report in October. We also saw other countries taking a stand with transparency regarding pay. France recently has done that too. Now, what I think is interesting is to see the differences between the UK and the French. For example, the French have made it clear that there will be repercussions for those companies with large pay gaps, mm-hmm. that there will be lists and rankings of those who are doing better. While in the UK, we don't see any repercussions except for the media, for example, because now you have to publish. And so once a year, the media will come and say, look at this, this is terrible. And so for the brand awareness and the brand value of the companies, it's important, but there won't be any legal or financial repercussions like what we're seeing in other countries. I think it's interesting to see how different countries are addressing this issue.
Even in the last couple of days, I've seen more and more news about companies facing the repercussions of...
Yes, and we're hearing also now from the United States.
Yes.
That there's an interest in creating new laws regarding this. Mm-hmm. We're hearing this also in the Netherlands and in Germany. So there are more countries that are talking about it.
And in terms of change in countries, yes, but also across sectors. I noticed that the technology sector in particular was the most improved, moving from 3% to 14%. You know, as technology is becoming the dominant industry now, do you think this will continue to rise and will have positive results?
I think this will continue to rise, but not so much because technology is important, but because there's social pressure happening. We see that there are certain sectors that have had a lot of critique for being an old boys network. And the technology sector is one of those sectors. And when society starts to complain about something and really raise their voices about this, I think that companies are forced to listen. And this is one of the reasons why I believe we're seeing this sharp growth in technology. And I hope we continue to see that.
Interesting. Now, yesterday you were amongst a range of panelists driving a discussion in line with sustainable strategies, in line with ESG. Now, the gender pay gap is a hugely relevant factor here. So I wonder, in terms of integrating ESG strategies, including the gender pay gap, into investing, which is going to be mainstream, what are the biggest barriers here?
Well, here again, the biggest barrier is the lack of data. Mm-hmm. And this is why we're addressing this by creating company scores. And it's the scores what we make available to the investors. If an investor wants the underlying data, of course, they're also this is also available to them. But when companies know that there's no longer this excuse, there's no data, so we can't give anything to the companies, to the investors, now we can say, yes, we can. We can give you quite negative scores. Mm-hmm. That's going to help to create more transparency from the companies and then a healthier competition between the companies, and then the ball gets rolling.
So essentially, you're making the case to investors that everything they're going to be putting their energy into is going to be in their favor.
Yes, and but I think it's also very important for the investors to start asking for this data, because we can produce all the data we want and we can offer it to asset managers, but the asset managers won't move and won't create products and get, unless the investors ask for them. So it's just as important as it is to talk to the companies, talk to the asset managers, inform them about ESG and about how you can incorporate now gender equality into ESG. Just as important, it's the fact, the need that investors come up and say, I would like to have investable products with a gender lens. Where are they? Mm. These products will be built with our data when the clients ask for it.
And it seems that the asset managers with ESG investments, this has been implemented most recently, I think it was in the past 1 to 4 years.
Oh yes, it's been very recent. And many times I speak to asset managers and they say, well, it sounds interesting, but in what ESG buckets can I put gender equality? Which is a very difficult question for us to answer, because it's like, I feel like saying, well, in every bucket,
yes,
you know, men and women make up society, it's 50-50. And so we should be putting gender equality in every bucket of ESG. It has to do with social issues. But you see that some of these asset managers are still grappling with the idea of, oh, this is new, where do I put it? And so it's very important also from here again that the clients start asking for it and saying, don't worry about where you put it, just put it, we want it.
And have you, since you've started, have you seen that really gaining traction?
It's just the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, the products launched with Equileap Data started about a year and a half ago. It's going to be 2 years in the fall that we launched the very first product that was tracking one of our indices. So it's really just the beginning, but we really hope to see some traction.
And I guess in the broader lens, just finishing, how do you think that this is going to redefine the landscape of investing in the future, and particularly the way investors will look at companies?
Well, I think we're bringing a new lens, because and the definition will be broader, and that's great, because we were calling it ESG, and we're calling it responsible investing or impact investing, but really the only lens and the strongest lens that was being used is one of the environment, which is essential. We all need to add an environmental lens into our investments, but it's not the only one. And so by bringing in gender equality, we're strengthening the S in ESG.
Right.
And we're making it stronger. And I think that this is what we're actually doing. And we're just bringing a more holistic approach to what it means to truly be a responsible investor and to truly be an impact investor.
I really like that. A holistic approach.
Yes.
It's a nice way. Well, thank you so much for speaking to me. I've learned a lot and it's been truly interesting.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.